And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 820. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. Sticking in the NL East to talk some Miami Marlins baseball. Always a young team, always a team you're kind of wondering what direction possibly things are going. But there's definitely fantasy interest here on the hitting and pitching side of things. And in order to help me break things down, you can find them over at CBS Sports on Fantasy Baseball Today. You can find them on Twitter at CP Towers. Chris Towers, how you doing, my friend?
Good. You know, I was talking to someone about the Rockies today, and I mean, the Rockies are a lot worse than the Marlins, but like bad teams are always kind of interesting for fantasy because, you know, you look at the Rockies roster, I think they have two players in the top 200 in ADP right now in NFBC drafts. And it's like, I mean, someone outside of the top 200 is probably going to be pretty good for them, right? Like, there's got to be. I mean, that hasn't been true the last couple of years. I guess Brenton Doyle a couple of years ago, but someone cheap on the Rockies is going to be good. We saw several players on the Marlins last year emerge unexpectedly as fantasy relevant. So, like, the nice thing about the bad teams is, yes, they don't have a lot of talent. What talent is there should get an opportunity. There are not going to be a lot of times with the Marlins, or, you know, and the Marlins are not a terrible team anymore. But there won't be many situations where, like, man, the Marlins have too many good players and not enough playing time for them, especially on offense. That won't be a problem. If you've got a pulse, if you show signs of life, you're going to have a chance to play for these Marlins.
Yep, it's going to be a fun team. And to your point, like, you like Rockies, Pirates, White Sox, all those teams. A phrase Ryan and I love so much is there's always fantasy value on bad teams. It's you can find it. Mm-hmm. And the Marlins, like, they're a pesky bunch. I don't know if it's the right way to say it, but I there's a couple years ago they made the playoffs, for crying out loud. Like, they can put it together if
they,
more than
they were alive. They went into, like, the final Thursday of the season mathematically alive for the playoffs. That's only like the seventh time that's ever happened for the Marlins. So
they've won two World Series in those.
Not the worst season in Marlins history last year, for sure.
Agreed. So that kind of sums up my first question I usually ask is, how do you think 2025 went? I guess not too shabby. All right.
It was a pleasant surprise. They were feisty. They were competitive. They were actually pretty good from like June on. I think they had like one of the 10 best records in baseball from the start of June on. Obviously, and that was without getting really, I don't really think they got like a best case scenario from anyone on the pitching side. There were a lot of frustrations with Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, a lot of injuries, Max Meyer and Ryan Weathers. But the offense, which didn't really look like it had much going for it going into the season, as we talked about before, though, Jacob Marcy got his opportunity and looked like a potential really, really good baseball player. Xavier Edwards was fine. Agustin Ramirez looks like a big part of this new crop of really interesting young catchers. Kyle Stowers is obviously a breakout. So I think 2025 was a as much of an unqualified success as a, 79-win season can be. Yeah, true. I was hoping there would be a little more aggressiveness this free agency. They haven't really signed any free agents of note, but they've been active in the trade market. They've made a couple of deals that I liked but may not make them better in 2027 or 2026. So still maybe looking at 2027 as the year that the Marlins are really competing, but they shouldn't be terrible this year. So there's some stuff to look forward to for the Marlins.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It's a young team, a good core in place, and a couple moves to your point probably would have helped get it even closer, but instead they traded a couple players, and we'll see where that goes. But let's start on the offensive side of things. And you mentioned Jacob Marcy. That's the guy that everyone was excited about last year. You discussed him on this show as a call up in the making. We saw 5 homers, 14 steals, .292 average over 55 games. That was previously he stole 47 bags at AAA before he got called up. Marcy's ADP is around 150-ish, give or take, in draft champions. What are your thoughts on what we could see from Marcy as he enters his age 25 season?
He's not going to hit .292 again. I think that's pretty clear. He was a guy at the minor league level who always walked a ton, was always super active on the base paths, but routinely put up pretty disappointing batting averages, especially for a guy who didn't really strike out all that much. Usually was right around league average, ran a lot of low BABIPs. That was kind of went to a ridiculous level in 2024 when he ran a 254 BABIP and hit just 200 across AA and AAA. But, you know, then he was a 357 BABIP guy at the major league level. I don't see much reason to think that's going to be sustainable. You know, at AAA, he was more like a 250 hitter. I think we're going to see a big step back in batting average. He's probably more like XBA says 275. Even that feels like it might be a little optimistic. I think 275 is probably closer to like a best case scenario season for Jacob Marcy in batting average. But, you know, he does have enough power to be a non-zero factor there. I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to get on base a decent amount. I think he's going to steal a bunch of bases. I think something like 265, 270, 15 homers and 45 steals is like a best case scenario. And maybe the median is more like 10 homers, 255. I still think 40 steals is going to be a pretty good hope for. But there is certainly some risk that things go very wrong here. I don't want to paper over that. You know, now that we're paying, it's a lot easier to be optimistic about everyone and paint the sunny side of the story when they don't cost anything. But now, like, you're paying a real price if you're drafting Jacob Marcy, and that comes with heightened scrutiny. So I do think there is some real, I'm trying to think of the right, like, I think there's real, he loses his job risk, especially there would be more risk if there were viable center field alternatives. And I don't really think the Marlins have any, so he's going to get some leash there, but there, Jacob Marcy is not assured of playing time from a performance perspective. There are definitely ways that this can go wrong. I still like him. I still think he's a decent pick, but you know, a ninth round pick in a 15 team league, a 11th or 12th round pick in a 12 team league, that's not nothing. You know, that's a real investment. So, and especially in your home leagues, I think he's going to go even higher than that, because all we have right now, you know, we're talking on January 21st. All we have right now really is the NFBC ADP, and there's some wonkiness to that that won't apply to home leagues. You know, relievers are there are going to be probably 10 relievers who are drafted in NFBC leagues before Jacob Marcy. In your standard, in your 12 team home league, those guys are going to go after him. So he's probably going to be more like 130. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some risk at that price with Jacob Marcy, as much as I like him.
Yeah, I'm glad you laid all that out there, because it seems like people are like, oh yeah, he was great, he's going to hit for average, and you know, this, that, and you laid out all the pros and cons, because I think he has a very risky profile. Like, there's a lot to like, to your point, but like, he's only done it for X amount of games, and there's a lot of learning probably still to be done at the big league level. And luckily, the team is young enough, and if he like just shows signs, like you said, they'll probably like stick with him and let him learn. But at the same time, they have outfield depth, maybe not center field depth, mm-hmm. to your point, but they have a bunch of outfielders, is the way I'll say it right now. And that leaves the corners kind of confusing. But I like Marcy. I think the speed's ridiculous, but definitely some risk involved. Xavier Edwards hit 283 last year, three homers, 27 steals in 139 games, which was great to see him play that much this past season. We know he's an average source with speed, really not much power at all. ADP's around 175, give or take. Are you in on a guy like Xavier Edwards with that profile?
Boy, I really wish he was, well, one, actually faster, because for all that he has, you know, done as a base stealer at the major league and minor league level, he's actually not an elite foot speed guy. He was 75th percentile in sprint speed last season. He's a very opportunistic player, but like, there's a reason he was moved off of shortstop. He just didn't have the range or the athleticism for the position, in addition to having a weak arm. So the whole profile makes a lot more sense if he's stealing 40 bags. And last season it was 27. So I think there were some like maybe nagging injuries holding him back, but the stolen bases I thought were very disappointing from Xavier Edwards. I know on FBT we had Craig Mish on last week. We're doing a team preview series as well. It's not competing. Ours are like 10 minutes long. No, it's a totally different thing.
It's totally different. I like it. You get the beat reporters on.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. And but Craig Mish did say he thinks this team's going to run a lot. You know, I think that's going to be a big part of their identity. And there is room for Xavier Edwards to be a more consistent source of stolen bases than he was last season when he stole 27. I think the price is fine. There's just not very much upside here. This is a very limited profile. Maybe you get one of those random D. Gordon years where he just slaps his way to a 310 average with like a 370 BABIP and everything goes right. Every single bleeder gets through and you end up with some upside there. But I think Xavier Edwards, for the most part, is what he is. And that is a two-category contributor and not necessarily a standout in the two categories. It's batting average, where he should be very good, but not elite, and steals, where, again, good, but 25 to 30 steals doesn't stand out as much these days as it used to.
It does not, especially with no power whatsoever.
Yeah.
It
makes and
it
really tricky. Probably not a ton of run upside either. You know, I think he got right to 80 last year, or 75. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe Marcy falters and Edwards has one of those high BABIP seasons and you end up getting close to 90 runs, but I think it's really just batting average and speed that you can bank on with Edwards.
Yeah, it's a profile I usually don't attract to, especially at that price tag. So it's a tough one. Very much better real life, I think, better player than fantasy when it comes to Xavier Edwards. Kyle Stowers had his season cut short with an injury, played 117 games, but hit 25 homers, hit 288, took the fantasy world by storm early in the season. Waiver wires galore when Stowers started raking out there, and everything looked great. ADP's around 140, 145 so far. Are we back in on Stowers? Because I'll be totally honest, the power I knew he had throughout the minors, I didn't expect 288.
Yeah, and I don't think that's likely to be sustainable. The XBA was 265. I think it's probably closer to the mid-200s. Is it 260, 270? Somewhere in that range. But I was really surprised at how good the quality of contact was. You look at the expected stats on Baseball Savant, and he was 15th in expected WOBA in all of baseball. He was ahead of Max Muncy, Corbin Carroll, Kyle Tucker, ahead of Nick Kurtz in terms of expected WOBA. That's pretty stunning. So it was one of those ones. It might have been a fluke, but he earned it. And there's a distinction to be drawn there. But the thing I struggle with this kind of out of nowhere breakout, he was 27, 28 years old, is I want as much data as I can to see if it's real. And especially I want that later season data where the book has gotten out on him. We know what the scouting report is. We're going to start attacking him in different ways. And because he had that oblique injury, we didn't see him after mid-August. And so we lost, 150 valuable plate appearances of data on Kyle Stowers that, would have told us a little bit more about, hey, can this guy actually hit lefties? Because he had a 682 OPS against them last year, and the underlying numbers were significantly worse than they were against righties. The Marlins did platoon him a decent amount last season. Like you said, they've got some corner outfield options. None of them are great, but the Marlins may be a team like the Dodgers and Rays who are just not afraid to platoon even stalwarts in their lineup if they think it maximizes their chances to win. So I think there's some risk of that, but I also think Kyle Stowers gives me some Brent Rooker vibes when he broke out in 2023, where, okay, I don't think Stowers is going to take that huge step forward and become a superstar like Rooker did in 2024. I don't think he's I think Rooker's like top 15 in ADP. I don't think Kyle Stowers should be.
He's up there,
right? At the position. But I mostly buy it because the underlying data is there. Like, he earned his breakout last season in a way that I don't think he's a 900 OPS bat, but can he settle in as an 830, 840 OPS guy who hits 27 to 30 homers and drives in a decent amount of runs? Yeah, I have a decent amount of faith in Kyle Stowers being that. So I do think his price is fine. I'll draft him a decent amount as like a number two or number three outfielder. And I actually have him right around 100th in my rankings, so a little ahead of his ADP. It makes me a little scary, but I do think the upside is worth it there.
If he does what you're discussing, I agree the power. Like I said, I believe all that. Like when people saw, okay, he's hitting well, and then you look at his Statcast numbers, mm-hmm. all that stuff. You're like, okay, he's like to your point, he earned it. Like this is what he's doing out there. It was the batting average, like in draft season now, the batting average. I'm having to like take a step back and be like, okay, what can we expect from Kyle Stowers to make this palatable? And yeah, if what you're saying falls in line 100%, I think it's a very good play. So I like Kyle Stowers. I'm not in love with Kyle Stowers. There's a lot of good outfielders in that range, which makes it really interesting. But
it is the one trap you could run into with Kyle Stowers is, yeah, he's going to be an everyday player this year too. They platooned him last year, and it's like, well, that can be a double-edged sword because if he really can't hit lefties, but they keep running him out there against them, and he hits .210 against lefties, that can be a real drag on the batting average as well. So it's a double-edged sword. I think the Marlins just owe it to themselves and to him to see if he can be an everyday hitter and not protect him against lefties as much. But there's definitely some risk that hurts the ratios there for him.
Yep. No, I agree. And it's a great point because we like one thing I always say, I get mad at first is when they say young players can't hit lefties. And it's like, well, you never gave him a chance to hit lefties. Yeah. Like that annoys. At the same time, more often than not, it proves to be the correct move. Yes. And so like that's why I'm sitting here and not somewhere else.
Well, it's a constant struggle because one, like it's really frustrating to watch the Rays call up a left-handed hitter who's 21 years old and be like, nope, you're a platoon bat immediately. You're not even going to get the chance. And on the other hand, it's like they are trying to win games. And if a guy's not helping you win games, depending on where you are in the development cycle, it can be easy to stomach. But sometimes, you know, the Rays have been doing it in situations where they're like on pace for 95 wins. And it's like they're on pace for 95 wins because they're putting guys in position to succeed. Yep. So that balance is always tricky.
Agreed. Agreed. All right, now I'm really looking forward to your response to this because I know I'm probably too excited about the Goose, is what I call him, Agustin Ramirez. But I love everything we saw last year in 136 games, 21 homers, 16 steals, .231. Yeah, sure, a better batting average would be great. But you give me a catcher that legit could go potentially, like we could see a 2020 season mm-hmm. behind a catcher. There's a world where that happens. I can stomach .230, .240 at that situation. Do you want it? No. Could you stomach it? Yes. And when it comes to the Goose, another thing about him that is so makes the conversation interesting is ADP is around 80. So he's in mm-hmm. that Drake Baldwin area at catcher. So he's like 80. He's like the fifth or sixth guy off the board at the catcher position. Where are you at on the Goose this season?
I think the one thing I would say specifically with Drake Baldwin, who is the natural comp because they're the closest to each other in ADP.
Yep.
I think Drake Baldwin has more playing time concerns than Agustin Ramirez. I think Ramirez is just more or less a full-time DH, especially with Marlins have a prospect named Joe Mack, who is yep. not as good of a hitter as Agustin Ramirez, but as a prospect overall, is viewed fairly similarly. He's like a top 50-ish guy. I know they like Liam Hicks as well. I think there's a decent chance that there is a non-zero chance that Agustin Ramirez is not catcher eligible going into 2027.
Agreed.
I don't know if it makes sense for him to play defensively. The defensive metrics were pretty much dreadful across the board. The Marlins have two viable defensive catchers they could break camp with in Liam Hicks and Joe Mack, and that makes it very iffy for Agustin Ramirez if you're looking at a long-term perspective. But I'm fine if he DHs 150 games, I'm fine with that because he enters this season with catcher eligibility. We'll worry about 27 when 2027 comes, but agreed. I think the bat is real for a guy who does not have great plate discipline. Because he's a relatively aggressive hitter who jumps on balls early, he doesn't really strike out that much. It was 19% last season. It was always right around 20% usually in the minors. So I think he is someone who can avoid the truly disastrous batting average. You know, he's not going to be a 30% strikeout rate guy. He's not going to hit 200. I think 245, 250, is well within the range of possibilities. The projection systems are all right around 245, 250. I think that's a pretty good place to live with the median. And if he does that, I'm thrilled with it because the power is real. He's not quite optimized for launch angle. So, you know, maybe you're not looking at a 30 homer ceiling, but 25 with 15 to 20 stolen bases. He's been a very aggressive, opportunistic base stealer throughout his minor league career. Stole 22 bases in 2024, 21 bases between the majors and minors last season. You're probably not getting too much more than 20, but I think that ceiling is within play, and 15 is a reasonable expectation. So I think the other nice thing about all the young catchers this year besides Ben Rice is Ben Rice is getting 100% of the hype. And so nobody else is getting pushed up the draft boards quite as much. In January drafts, Ben Rice is up to 45.9, which is
crazy. It's crazy.
I love him, but that is so much. Like, let's not. William Contreras was like a top 40 pick last year, and he played through an injury. Like, I know we're not talking about that specifically, but
no.
Ben Rice is kind of sucking all the oxygen out of the room, which is keeping like Agustín Ramírez 76.5. That's a lot. It feels reasonable to me. Drake Baldwin, 81.6, feels reasonable to me. Then you go a little deeper, like Salvador Perez, 92, Yainer Diaz, 109. There's a lot of good catchers that are making it hard for me to justify. Certainly a top 20 pick on Cal Raleigh and a top... I mean, what are we going to get to, like, second round Ben Rice by February? Like,
it feels that way.
Every single draft, it's like, well, I'm going to be the one to draft Ben Rice, but you got to do it a little earlier. And it's just like, that's the problem with an arms race.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I love the Ben Rice profile. I'm not going to deny it. I have zero shares of Ben Rice so far because there's zero chance I'm paying that price, to your point. I have no Raleigh again. Love the big dumper. It's great. But if I'm going to go early, I'll start with the William Contreras world if I have to, or I'll go down the board because, like I said, I love Ramírez. I absolutely love him, and I'm well aware of the defensive liabilities. I love Joe Mack. We'll talk more about him later. I love all of that. So I get the DH situation again. Like you said, that's a 2027 problem right now. So bring on the goose in 2026. I'm a fan. Another player I have a lot of shares of, and a lot of it's price situation and positionally, potentially is Otto Lopez. Really love the Otto Lopez profile. You're going to get a second base and a shortstop eligible player, which is really nice. Went 15-15 last year while hitting 246. And that was a year after going 6-20 with a better average. So we've seen two different kind of outcomes for Otto Lopez. Best part to me is ADP is around 215. Very affordable. What are your thoughts on Otto Lopez hitting in 2026?
I think he's a great middle infielder in basically any Roto League. The one thing that worries me is that we're now 2 years in where he's underperformed his expected stats. Ex-WOBA in 2024, he underperformed by about 15 points. Last year, he was one of the biggest underperformers in baseball, underperformed by 35 points of ex-WOBA. He had a 330 ex-WOBA, 269 XBA. I think there's a little bit of pop here. I think he can hit 270. And I think an absolute best case scenario, if the Marlins really wanted to be aggressive on the base pass, I think he could get to 2020. I don't think that's likely, but if you're looking for a little bit of upside, I think Otto Lopez has it. He was once a top prospect. There are glimpses of really strong skills. He's got a really good approach at the plate. He doesn't strike out. He makes a lot of contact. And so, you know, I do wonder if this is a situation where the Marlins might tweak his approach a little bit, try to get him to hit the ball in the air to the pull side a little more often, ring out a little more power at the expense of a little bit of swing and miss. But as is, I think he's a sneaky, really solid fantasy option with that 15 to 20 homer and steal upside with a batting average that should be pretty helpful.
Yep, I agree. I've told people when I discussed him, I'm like, I'll take the 15-15. I'll take his last season, honestly, at his ADP. Like, I'm totally fine with that, and I believe he's a better batting average guy, to your point. So it's like, I have him in a lot of drafts right now. I'm big fan of that price point with the Otto Lopez, as we call him on Bubba and the Bloom, the bus driver for you Simpsons fans out there. All right, Connor Norby, This is another guy came over with Kyle Stowers for those that are sleeping under a rock on this one. But a guy we've seen power in the minors. We've seen some speed. Banged up a lot last year. Only played 88 games. We saw 8 homers, 8 steals, which is great. While hitting 251. I've heard rumors that maybe he's the first baseman. We'll talk about Pauly going to third. I've heard that as well. But Norby's ADP is 358. Like, if he does have a job here, this is interesting. So what are we thinking about Connor Norby right now at 358, which is really, really cheap, I think, for that potential profile?
Yeah, they have talked about playing him in the outfield as well. There was a piece on MLB.com the other day. Let's see. December 29th, so a couple weeks ago now, where he got hurt early on last year, I think during spring training, and he just spent the entire season looking for his swing, and he never quite found it. And he's been working with the team's hitting coach in the offseason. He's trying to be one of these pull-side power guys, you know, become a little more aggressive in his swing and tap into more of that power, because Connor Norby's never been a huge raw power guy. So if he's going to be a power hitter, it's going to have to come on optimizing his swing, his launch angle, and that is the focus this offseason. Now, we'll hear that a lot from a lot of players. Everybody's working on their swing. Everybody's in the best shape of their life. Matt McClain added 12 pounds of muscles somehow in 2 months. He didn't. Nobody adds 12 pounds of muscles in 2 months.
Not legally.
So we're, you know, you have to guard against all that kind of stuff. But I do think Connor Norby, we saw him be a pretty productive player at the end of 2024 after that trade. He was a very useful corner infield option. I think he can be that. I'm not sure there's huge upside here, but when you're talking about a pick outside of the top 300, you know, almost 400, it's the bar is pretty low for fantasy relevance. And I think, you know, could you get, I don't know. Okay. So since he got to the Marlins, he's played about 130 games. He's hit 15 homers. Could you get 18 to 20 homers and 85 RBI out of Connor Norby with a batting average that sits around 250? Yeah, I think so. That's not hugely difference making, but at that point in the draft, as a corner infielder who could gain eligibility at multiple spots, I think he's okay.
Yeah, no, that's where he's interesting. At that price point, I'm like, yeah. Like, this is a guy just kind of sitting out there, and I feel like it's because of the injuries and kind of this, the up and down playing time the last couple of years. He's kind of not getting the attention he could deserve. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't say if would is the right word just yet, but could deserve is where I'm at on him. Let's do Graham Pauly real quick, and then we'll head back to the outfield. But since we're talking the corner infield, like I said, is – I was talking to James Anderson and some others, and they're hearing the shift for Graham Pauly. Once was a third baseman in the Padres system and everything in other places. Tons of power in the minor leagues, so there's optimism on what you can get here. Somehow I feel like he should be ancient. He's only going to be 25. I feel like we can talk about him forever. And his ADP is like 560. So what are your thoughts on Graham Pauly?
Yeah, he actually had a 2020 season back in 2023 with the Padres. That was mostly in the low minors, although he did hit well at Double-A. He was a guy who I think the production kind of outstripped the scouting reports in a lot of ways, and I think the scouting reports have kind of, or the production has kind of caught up in a bad way to it. But this is not a bat that I get particularly excited about. I don't think there's big underlying skills. So Graham Pauly feels like he might be the third baseman until they find the third baseman in Miami, you know, whether that's Connor Norby getting back on track or, you know, I don't really think there's any third baseman of note in the system. They've got a couple shortstops. So maybe one of those guys moves off shortstop. But yeah, I don't have a ton of interest in Graham Pauly, but if you do, I'd love to hear what I might be missing. Yeah.
No, I'm more just like speculating if he plays every day. We've seen the power throughout the minors. Is this like a real thing that can translate? Still so young. And more so, it's just my brain. If I'm doing like a draft and hold under the NFBC at 560, a depth piece that could be first base, third base. That's all it is for me.
That late, a guy who might play every day. Yeah. You know, there's inherent that's where my brain value goes. Yeah.
Yeah. But like if I'm in a redraft league, I'm probably not going to the table going, I want Graham Pauly.
Yeah.
If anything, if he starts doing well, if he pulls a Kyle Stowers on us, okay, fab. We'll figure it out. Yeah. But at the
even draft, in a 15 team, like 29-round draft. I think that's too shallow for Graham Pauley.
Agreed. That's why I'm not there just yet. But this guy I want to be interested in is that's Owen Casey, who came over the Edward Cabrera deal. I was kind of interested in him even before the trade in Chicago. Now, I think he'll have playing time, but again, corner outfield, there could be platoons. There could be a lot of questions in play here. He's still very young. We've seen power. We've seen an good average, some speed in the minors with the Cubs. ADP is 375 right now. Again, I might just be optimistic. It's the, you know, the prospect shine, I guess. But what are your thoughts on Owen Casey?
One thing I'm surprised about is that his price has actually gone down.
Yeah,
since too. The trade, which doesn't make any sense. Wrigley Field has been a tough hitter's park the last couple of years. There's been, I don't know, some kind of change in the wind pattern that made it play down last season. He has a much more clear path to playing time in Miami, and his price is lower. I don't really get it. I have wanted Owen Casey on the Marlins for years. I feel like I personally willed this trade into existence because I've never been much of an Edward Cabrera believer, and I'm a big fan of Owen Casey's. The fact that the Cubs never gave him a chance, even though he got to AAA back in the beginning of 2024, that's a red flag for me. That's always the Cubs know this guy better than anyone, and they had real needs the past couple of years, and they never gave him an opportunity. There was a point where they called up Kevin Alcantara instead of him.
Multiple times.
Which tells us something. It could tell us that the Cubs are wrong about Owen Casey, but that is hard to dislodge for me. However, you look at the skill set. Legit plus power. I would say on the scouting grade scale, 60, 65 at least. I mean, you're talking 90th percentile or better in pretty much every quality of contact measure at AAA. We haven't seen it at the major league level, but he barely played, so I don't hold that against him. There is some swing and miss in the game. I think it was a 28% strikeout rate at AAA last season. It was right around that rate in 2024. Not as much swing and miss as you would think, though. His whiff rate, his in-zone contact rate, they weren't great last season, but it was 83% in-zone contact last season at the major at AAA. It was 28% whiff rate overall, whiffs per swing. None of that is great. There's going to be some strikeouts here, but it's not so alarming that I don't think he can hit. So I think, yeah, you're going to see some low batting averages and a strikeout rate around 30%, probably 26 to 30%, depending on how he grows. But I think the power's real. I think he can absolutely be a 30 homer guy, even in Miami. He does a decent job of pulling the ball in the air I'm a big Owen Casey fan. I think his price is way too low. I think even in 12 team leagues with 29 rounds, he's one of those guys I want to be throwing a dart at in the later rounds, because I don't think there's any question he's in the opening day lineup. I think it could be 10 games before Owen Casey's hitting cleanup for the Marlins. So
I like it.
They really need someone to develop alongside Kyle Stowers and become another key piece of that offense. I think this is the best guy on the team with the chance to do that.
I love the optimism because, like I said, I've been grabbing shares off and on this offseason when he was even with the Cubs. I'm like, okay, there's skills here, and the price is very affordable to take chances, mm-hmm. like you said. And what's it going to hurt you if you take him that late? It doesn't work out. It's an easy drop. You move on. You shuffle it through. But at that price point, there's a ceiling play involved there that could be quite nice. We did mention, you know, Conine, Hicks, you kind of mentioned, Christopher Morel, Heriberto Hernandez, Sanoa. Anybody else on the bench worth discussing for fantasy?
Yeah, we mentioned Joe Mack, mm-hmm. who in this catcher landscape is probably not going to matter. You know, this is like a Roberto Hernandez kind of guy where – who was the Rays Mariners catcher for a long time?
Rays Mariners.
Zunino.
Yes, Tom. Like, yeah, that's such a good comp. Oh, my goodness.
There is legit pop with Joe Mack, but his swing is very grooved. Like, he is not a hitter. Like, there aren't a lot of hitter qualities here. He's swinging for the fences and hope he runs into them. And so you can see a 20-homer outcome for Joe Mack. it's just probably going to come with like a 220 average at the major league level. And so I think he's going to be a good – yeah, I think he's going to be a good player because the gloves should be very good. But from a fantasy perspective, he's kind of the classic number two catcher. You're hoping he does enough damage to offset the damage he's doing to your batting average is really what it comes down to. And the peak season is probably something like 240, 24 homers, 65 runs, 65 RBI. You know, there's nothing special there, but that can matter in a deeper league context. So Joe Mack, especially in NL-only leagues, definitely a name to know.
Catcher two for sure. I like the NL-only, maybe catcher one, the way things go there. But I do like the Joe Mack call for sure. Let's head to the mound. Sandy Alcantara returned this past year. We saw 174 innings after missing all of 2024. Thanks to Tommy John. It was a roller coaster. It's the best way I'll say it. Like, there were some good starts as the season went along, but there's a lot of up and downs and probably more bad than good reflected in the 5.36 ERA. But still, again, I won't be completely wrong on him because there was good moments to be had by Sandy, but he's definitely not the pitcher he once was. ADP is around 155. Are we in on Sandy in 2026?
Personally, I am, yeah. I think he's going to go back to being a true outlier in terms of workload this season. 174 innings in his first year back from Tommy John surgery, like nobody's doing that. So I think there was a moment in July, like late June, early July, where I was like, he's starting to look like himself. And it's funny because the stretch I'm specifically referring to where I started to get a little more optimistic about him was a stretch where he allowed 18 runs in 17 innings. But the thing about Sandy, and I've watched a lot of him, I'm a Marlins fan. The difference between early season Sandy Alcantara last year when he was getting shelled and getting pulled after two innings and the good versions of Sandy is there will be bad starts because he doesn't miss a lot of bats. His command can come and go. There will be bad starts. When he's good, when he's locked in, he's still going six innings. And that was what he started to do around late June, early July. He was not pitching great, but he was going six innings every time. And then once the All-Star break hit, he had a 3.33 ERA after the All-Star break. Strikeout rate was up to around 21%. Not where it was in the Cy Young season. I'm not sure he'll ever be that good again. Everybody has career years. But I think he's going to, assuming health, I think he's going to be a 190, maybe 200 inning guy. I think it's going to be a probably mid threes ERA. He's going to have to volume his way to strikeouts, but I think he can get to 170, 180. And I think he's going to be worth the price you pay. I think he's going to be a nice little discount as a rotation stabilizer. And usually you have to pay for 200 plus innings or guys who even have a chance at 200 plus innings. You have to pay a lot for them. And I think Sandy's a guy who can do that with much better ratios than we got last season.
Yeah, there's a few things I definitely agree with there. The innings eating, I think, is tremendous. Like the fact he threw 174 innings after that, and like that's where I was kind of hinting. Like there were signs last year where you're like, okay, wow, he's starting to actually look like he's regaining things. And I think part of it when it kind of started falling apart against like the workload again, 174 innings,
probably asking too much.
2024, yeah, it started going away. So I get it. At 155, he's like your SP 3 or 4, even like. Mm-hmm. Potential to be an SP2 probably. I get the argument to be, I kind of get both sides of it. I get it, but I could see taking the chance there because at least there's a lot more upside with him than some other guys in that range.
Well, and I think what I like about him specifically this year relative to the player pool is you get to around 100 and there's a lot of question marks being pushed up the draft boards this year. I like all these second year pitchers. Nolan McClain technically is still a rookie, I think, but Nolan McClain, Cam Schlittler, Chase Burns, Trey Savage. I'm forgetting at least one of them.
Mizorowski.
Like I love the talent, but when you're drafting those guys as your number two or number three starting pitcher, you are taking on a ton of risk that they make two starts in spring training and blow out their elbow, which can happen to anyone, but specifically with 23, 24-year-olds who are throwing 99 miles an hour the way most of those guys are. I like Alcantara as the cheap stabilizer when we're taking on all these risks. So I think there are a couple other guys. You know, Kevin Gausman's a little more expensive, but he provides something similar. You know, maybe Pablo Lopez can be that guy. I know there's some injury concerns there, but it's where he fits in the player pool, I think, makes him an attractive pick as well, just because there are a lot of expensive risks at pitcher this year.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. A lot of risks,
including
at pitcher.
Including this one. The next pitcher we're going to talk
yes,
about.
Yes, yes. Yuri Perez, who you're talking about buzz on players going, like you mentioned Ben Rice earlier. There's a lot of buzz around Yuri Perez. Now, he's not climbing the charts like Ben Rice, but he's moving. 95 innings last year after he came back from injury. Again, lots of signs of really good stuff. Also, docking the rust off type stuff. ADP is like 85, though. You got to pay for him on, like, say, like 70 pick difference between the two. Where are you at on Yuri Perez this season?
When you look at the number of pitchers over the last 20 years who have gotten to at least 90 innings as a 20-year-old, it is basically a list of the best pitchers over the last 20 years, and it's Brad Keller, some random guy did it. Some guy who was not good at all but got called up for 20 as a 20-year-old when he was, I think it was Brad Keller, someone like that. And it was like, well, all right, everyone else, like Zach Greinke, Felix Hernandez, Clayton Kershaw, Justin Verlander, they all got all did it, and then there was like one guy who was not good. Maybe Yuri Perez is that guy. But generally speaking, when you're talented enough to pitch significant innings as a major leaguer as a 20-year-old, you're a pretty good bet to become an ace. Yep. The question with Yuri Perez is that 2026? I think it's a bet worth making if you're playing a bunch of leagues and you're playing for an overall title and you're trying to find that outlier performance. Because I think Yuri Perez could be that kind of outlier. He's got this really, really good fastball. He's still like searching for the right mix of breaking balls. He is an extreme fly ball pitcher who manages to keep the ball in the yard pretty well because they just don't line him up. So there's going to be really low BABIPs, 251 BABIP through the first 186 innings of his career. That might not be a fluke. You know, maybe it's 251's a little low, but he might legitimately be an outlier in terms of his ability to limit hits just because so many of them are going to be infield fly balls or weak pop-ups. And he's got strikeout upside. So I think we're going to see a season where Yuri Perez absolutely smashes at some point. Do I want him to be my number two pitcher in every single draft this year? No, I think that's asking too much. He's never thrown 100 innings at the major league level. He has injury concerns. There's a lot of reasons it could and maybe will go wrong. But this is absolutely a great boomer bust pick at that range. It's just you have to diversify your boomer bust picks. You can't. I don't care how much you like Nolan McClain. You can't have him be the only pitcher you draft in that range. You got to get some Cam Schlittler. You got to get some Kevin Gausman, even though he's kind of boring. You gotta mix and match. And so I think that's Yuri Perez is absolutely in that discussion.
That's a great point. Like mix and match. The ceiling's there. Lots of concerns as well. Cause I like Yuri. I think I have him. He's definitely in my top 20 starting pitchers in fantasy. Cause I do love the skills. Really, really do. I'm also very terrified of what could go wrong at the same time. So yeah, I'm not going to ever tell anybody not to draft him. I think there is a lot to love about Yuri, but it's like, I always like to say is just know what you're getting into because it could make things a little ugly for you. Max Meyer. This is another I'll say kid, but he's actually one of the older pitchers in the rotation. He made 12 starts last year, a little banged up, battled some injuries as well. Also, they kind of just held him down where it kind of felt like what's like the last couple of years, a combination of things, but we've seen a lot of good with Meyer and a lot of, there might still be some development or he might not be as good as we hoped he was. Lots of questions there. ADPs though, around 400, very cheap. Where you at on Max Meyer?
I think in an ideal world, Max Meyer's in the bullpen for the Marlins. Maybe it won't happen at the beginning of the season. I don't think he's going to hold up. There's been some talk that the hip injury that he suffered last year that cost him most of the season, I think he ended up having surgery, was mechanically related, and he might have to change his mechanics to avoid re-injuring it, and that's always concerning. But mostly, I don't know if he's good enough to be a starter. Just flat out, I don't know if the fastball is good enough. I don't know if he has anything besides the slider. But if he's sitting 96 out of the bullpen and has that legitimately great slider, then I think he can be a weapon. I just don't think it's going to work out as a starting pitcher. I think he'll open the season in the Marlins rotation, assuming he's healthy, but there's a lot of talk, rightly so, about the depth on the Marlins. If you look at roster resource, they don't have Robbie Snelling in their rotation right now. They don't have Thomas White in their rotation. Those are two of the, arguably, the two top left-handed prospects in baseball, I think. There is a real chance Max Meyer's out of this rotation fairly quickly if he doesn't hit the ground running.
Okay, good to know. I haven't been in on Meyer because I don't know how healthy he is, to be honest.
So also that.
Yeah, kind of concerned there. And the inconsistencies in general, like, was it injury related? Was it? There's a lot of questions with mm-hmm. Meyer where I'm just like, yeah, probably not going to go there. I know it doesn't cost much, but I'm just not in at the moment. Braxton Garrett, I am very interested to hear what you've maybe heard following the Marlins closer than I do, because I love the skills of Braxton Garrett. We saw some really good skills for a couple of years. This last year was the elbow injury, pretty much just derailed everything. Again, supposed to be healthy for this season. Strikeouts have always been okay. Ratio's been very good with Braxton Garrett. But again, I don't know the health with Garrett. Maybe no one knows the health except Braxton Garrett himself. ADP is around 465. So, yeah, I want to like Braxton Garrett, Chris, but I just don't know if I should.
Yeah, he's one who I think he'll be like 18 months removed from Tommy John surgery by the time he starts, right? It was January of last year, so he'll be about 14 months by the time spring training starts. So not quite as far off removed. I think he's got the inside shot to be in the rotation. I everything I've seen, there haven't been a ton of updates, but he started throwing back in June, so he should be ready to go. But they're going to have to limit his innings. That's going to be the case. He threw 37 innings in 2024 while dealing with injuries. He's coming back from Tommy John, didn't throw in 2025. So I think you're looking at a similar workload to what Yuri got last year. Probably a little higher because he's hit, you know, some of those milestones in the past, you know, 160 innings in 2023. But there, you're not going to see, I don't think, 150 innings from Braxton Garrett. They're going to have to limit him. So I think he's solid. I think he's a nice high floor pitcher. That's a really nice thing to have if you're the Marlins and from your number four, sure, or number five, especially because there's some volatility with the rest of the guys. But given the likely innings limits and the lack of upside, I think there's just a ceiling on how valuable Braxton Garrett can be. So in a 12-team league, I really don't think he needs to be drafted. Maybe those 15 teams, you can talk yourself into it once we see him in spring training. But there's a very good chance that Braxton Garrett goes undrafted in your league, makes a couple starts at the beginning of the season, starts to look pretty good, and we're kind of scrambling to add him on waivers. I don't think it's ever likely. I mean, it's always so hard when guys come back from Tommy John surgery, because sometimes, yes, guys come back just throwing like 2 miles an hour harder, and it's like, well, now they're a different pitcher. But assuming he's the same guy he's always been, it's not great stuff. It's pitchability. And that, I think, leads to a lower ceiling.
Yeah, and I agree. There's so much to like, but it's just so tough to know. Like, you nailed it at the very, like, my whole thing could just wrap up in one sentence. Don't know what to expect post Tommy John. Yeah. That's just, I have no clue with any of these guys, because some of them, to your point, come back looking great. You draft them early. When they have to slow down, you drop them, you move on. Life is good. Some you think are going to do that, you trust them, they blow up your ratios right out the gate, and you're scrambling for a while, so it's all
over. But enough about Spencer Strider.
I got some fun stuff to say about him, but that's a Braves podcast. But yeah, I really want to like Braxton Garrett. It's just got to see some more, maybe, I don't know, a lot of thoughts there. All right, they traded Edward Cabrera. Mm-hmm. They traded Ryan Weathers, and that frees up some youth potentially getting a chance here. You mentioned the volatility in this rotation. There's Jansen Junk. There's Robbie Snelling. There's Thomas White. There's one rotation spot, technically one. Maybe they take Max Meyer's spot, like you said earlier. How do you kind of see the rest of this rotation playing out with those arms? And maybe I'm missing someone else.
I will say the likeliest outcome is Jansen Junk's in the rotation, and he's probably fine. I don't think he's very good, but there are certainly worse fifth starters in baseball than a guy who might have, I don't know, 95th percentile command. Like, he's really got exceptional command. The stuff's just not good. So I think it's another low floor or low ceiling, but, you know, could be a decent stabilizer for the Marlins if they want to go in that way, in that direction. There is a real chance that Thomas White is in the rotation on opening day, which I did not expect before this offseason, but I have now heard from several people that Thomas White has a real chance. If you don't know, Thomas White is probably, I guess it depends who you ask, arguably the best left-handed pitching prospect in baseball. He is is he 21 yet? He just turned 21 a couple months ago, and just massive, massive strikeouts. 39% strikeout rate last season. He struck out 145 in 89 and two-thirds innings. That is bonkers.
That's ridiculous.
He got to AAA, and it was only two starts at AAA, so I think he probably starts the season at AAA, but the Marlins have been very willing to skip AAA. I don't know if Yuri Perez pitched much at AAA at all, but organizationally, they've always been willing to skip AAA or very short stints there. And Thomas Perez has a chance to, you know, remember when Jose Fernandez broke into the rotation, it was as a 20 or 21 year old. Nobody really thought he had a chance at the start of the spring, but he was just so good. Thomas White has that kind of ability. Now, Jose Fernandez is my favorite baseball player of all time. I think he is one of the most talented pitchers I've ever seen. That is unfair expectations to put on Thomas White. He's probably not that good. But he is super talented. If he makes strides with the command, especially this offseason, I think all bets are off, and he could be, I don't know, maybe 45% chance he's in the majors in April, one way or the other, whether it starts the season or just dominates a AAA for 3 weeks and forces their hand. But he is on the cusp of the majors, could win a job out of spring, and has huge upside. Snelling is another lefty, doesn't have nearly as much upside. The raw stuff just isn't there, but it's gotten better over the past couple of years. When he got to the Marlins, I think he added a couple of ticks to his fastball. He went from averaging about 93 miles per hour last season to 95 at AAA. It's very good command. He had a 251 ERA in 136 innings, dominated in his 11 starts at AAA. I really don't think there's much reason for the Marlins not to put him in the rotation, except we might as well see if Max Meyer unlocks something, or we might as well see if Jansen Junk can be a stabilizer. But I think if it's an open competition, Robbie Snelling's probably just better than Max Meyer and Jansen Junk. And he's a pretty exciting player. There's a lot of lefties were surprisingly productive in the majors last season. It was kind of one of the defining storylines of the year, like Matthew Boyd and Connelly Early when he got called up, and Parker Messick for the Guardians, a guy who just is getting zero hype this spring. I think he's super underrated. I think he's really good. I think Snelling can be in that mold. He's got great command. He's got a full arsenal. He's got above average stuff now. I think Robbie Snelling is someone who should win a job out of spring if they give him the chance, and I think could be a very solid fantasy option. So certainly in 15-team leagues, I think he's worth a dart throw. I think the ADP – where is Robbie Snelling in the ADP? It's very low.
We got Snelling's at 290.
Okay.
Over the last seven days. Snelling's 290. He's gone up, obviously, since the trades. Thomas White's 396.
Okay.
And Jansen Junk's 527.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Junk's likelier to be in the rotation, but there's just very little upside. That's one that, like, we get to 2 weeks out from the season, the Marlins say, hey, that's our fifth starter. You look at the schedule, and he's got, you know, the Nationals and the Rockies on the road or something, his first two starts. I might just add Jansen Junk just to stream him. But you're probably dropping him. Whereas Snelling and White, if they win a rotation spot, should be drafted as if they will be very useful options. And I think even in your 12-team leagues right now, Robbie Snelling is worth drafting.
100%. I'm with you. I'm really glad to hear the Thomas White, because I haven't quite figured out what to do with him yet, because I do love the skills, but don't know where the role is. But I agree, on paper, should be better than these guys. But
it sounds like he's going to get the chance at the very least. They're going to give him a real opportunity to win a job out of camp. And when you're talking about a player this talented, that's all we can ask for. You know, maybe he flops. He's 21 years old. He's made two starts at AAA. Maybe he's not ready. He goes out in his first two spring starts and walks nine. Yep. But if the control is passable at all, it sounds like the Marlins think he might be ready. Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. All right, let's head to the bullpen, where a new closer is in town, and Pete Fairbanks. Here's your big offseason acquisition.
That's
right here.
That's the big move.
This is the big one. Pete Fairbanks, 23 or more saves in three straight years. Strikeouts have been serviceable. Ratio serviceable. He's a good closer. As long as he can feel his fingers, we're good. ADP is around 90 over the last 7 days. Again, you mentioned earlier in the show, ADP for closers through the roof right now. But he's a solid closer, like a consistent closer if you need it. And like we joke about this being the big move for the Marlins, but they've been going through so many closers the last few years. Like, at least there's stability now, and they can trade them for all we know. But I don't think they will, because I think they will kind of compete as well. So what are your thoughts on Fairbanks this year when it comes to fantasy with the new team?
Yeah, I mean, all last season we had a running bit that Frank Stample would say on FBT, the Marlins do not and never will have a closer. I think they have a closer. Now, I think it's probably like the way Rocco Baldelli would use Yoan Duran before last season,
gotcha,
where he gets like 65% of the saves. I don't think this is going to be a situation where Pete Fairbanks gets every single save from the Marlins. I just don't think that's how Clayton McCullough wants to work. There are going to be situations where the highest leverage situation is in the eighth inning with one out, and there's runners on second and third, and they bring Pete Fairbanks in. And then, I don't know, Heriberto Hernandez, no. Roberto Enriquez is on the IL. Yeah. Who are some other?
Yeah, Calvin Fauché.
Yeah, Calvin Fauché, Anthony Bender. Yeah. Those guys will get, you know, three or four saves. But I think Fairbanks stays. If he stays with the Marlins, you're probably looking at 25 plus saves. I do think he's good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's great anymore, and there's some injury risk here. But you know, for the Marlins, $13 million is a lot of money.
Yep.
That's I don't think anybody else on the roster is making that much. I think that makes him their second highest paid player after Giancarlo Stanton, funny enough. So I have to assume he's going to be the closer, even if the closer means a different thing for the Marlins than it might for some other teams.
Yeah, that's fair. And he's not costing the premium. Like, it's still expensive, but it's not the premium closer costs. All right, we talked Joe Mack, we mentioned Snelly, we mentioned Thomas White. Any other potential prospects we can be looking out for 2026?
Yeah, it's obviously not a great system, although I think the trades they've made over the last year or so have given them some depth. You could see Carson Milbrandt, you know, breaking out. You could see Noble Meyer breaking out and being a factor in the second half. But those guys are all pretty far. The one name that I would want to mention is, and it's a long shot that he matters for 2026. He was just drafted last June, but it's Iva Arquette, who was the Marlins' first overall pick, or the seventh overall pick, their first round pick in the 2025 draft. He was viewed as arguably the best college hitter in last year's class. And you look at the recent state of top prospects drafted out of college, a lot of them move really quickly. Some guys make their debut within a year of getting drafted. That seems to happen a lot more since the restructuring of the minors than it did before. So while I don't think it's likely that Arquette moves that quickly, he did get to high A last year and held his own in his professional debut, but didn't dominate the way Wyatt Langford did necessarily. So I don't think we're going to see a Wyatt Langford, Cam Smith timeline for Iva Arquette, but it's within the realm of possibility, I suppose. And that he could be, in the long run, the team's third baseman.
Okay.
He's currently a shortstop, but he's just really big. He's 6'5", so you always have to wonder if those guys are going to have to move to third. But he could force their hand at some point during the season if he, you know, has a good spring and gets to Double A fairly quickly.
All right, that's good to know. Yeah, it took me a second to find him because that's a heck of a way to spell Iva.
I took a second,
but yeah, I found him.
I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, honestly.
That's how I would. So, yeah. Not saying I'm any expert. Trust me, I screwed them all up. But yeah,
and then Kemp Alderman could play a role in their outfield. There's an opportunity there. Davison De Los Santos was a guy who got a lot of hype last offseason. I was really in on him. He had a really tough year in AAA, so I don't know. You know, he's kind of starting to look like he might just be a quad A type of guy where the power plays in the minors, but it's not. He doesn't make enough contact. He doesn't optimize the spray angle the way you'd like to. But Davison De Los Santos, it could click into place. He's still very young. Had a 40 homer season in 2024. A name to watch if he gets off to a hot start.
Yeah, I had a lot of draft and hold shares last year. Obviously, that did not work. Haven't attempted to draft him this year, so everyone, you're welcome. If you'd like to, he'll probably do something now. But I'm concerned just with, like, Ramirez probably going to DH.
Yeah.
And then, you know, got the Norby Pauly situation at the corners. Like, where's home for De Los Santos? That's been my concern. But I love the powers, undeniable. So, yeah. Yes.
I think he could be a Jake Berger type if everything works out well. Ooh,
I've always got a soft spot for Jake Berger. Final question I have for you here, Chris, is what are your expectations for the Marlins in 2026?
I think they will be feisty. I think they will be around 500 for most of the year. I think they probably end up below 500 because they are probably still at the point where we get to July 30th and they should trade at least Pete Fairbanks, and I don't want to see Sandy go, but it might make sense if the pitching prospects work out. It might just make sense to move him and get a big haul if he has a good year. So I think it's another transitional year. They'll be competitive. They'll be fun. There will be moments where they look really good if the pitching staff clicks, but I don't think this team is quite ready for prime time yet. But
well,
could be.
Yet. Yeah, it's a good term because you said it a second ago when you were talking about your prospects, like they've been trading. Mm-hmm. This team's very young, very young. So, like, we saw some developments last year with Ramirez and Stowers and some of these guys getting some reps. You do another year of that, you might have a nice core and stop me, but maybe they spend some money next year, just a little bit. And
I thought they would this offseason, so.
Yeah, so we'll see. But, like, they are so close. It's just be fun if they do it. But before we head out of here, Chris, as always, great talking to you. Remind everybody where they can find you and what you guys got coming up over there at CBS Sports Fantasy Baseball Today.
Yeah, cbssports.com/newsletters. I write the Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter. It is 3 days a week and will be going to 5 days a week at some point in the next month. And I don't know how I'm going to manage that, but I do every year somehow. We got the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. We are 4 days a week right now. We will be going 5 days a week soon, or we're 3 days a week right now. I can't keep it. It'll be a lot of podcasts. We're doing our team preview series right now, so podcasts wherever you get Fantasy Baseball Today. Frank and Scott do very good work, and I just show up and try to keep my head above water.
Stop it. Yeah, but appreciate you joining me. Always love catching up and chatting with you, yes. Especially talking Marlins baseball because it's your team. So it changes things up for you a little bit. But thanks for joining me. We'll have to record it again sometime. Yeah. But everybody, I know you already follow him if you're listening to the show, but follow Chris if you're not. But for now, Benched with Bubba, episode 820, your 2026 Miami Marlins team preview. Catch you all next time.